She's... I open my eyes, and the murmurs of the others drown her out. She's looking for something.
Someone, the soul catcher corrects me. She refuses to move on. It has been decades. She hurt someone too, long ago. Though she did not mean to, I think.
A not-so-subtle reminder of the soul catcher's request the last time I saw her. I'm doing as you asked, I say. I'm keeping my distance from Lyra.
Very good, Veturius. I'd hate to have to harm you.
A chill runs up my spine. You can do that.
I can do a great many things. Perhaps I shall show you before your end.
She places her hand on my arm, and it burns like fire. When I wake up, it's still dark out, and my arm aches. I roll up my sleeve, expecting to see the knotted, scarred flesh where my injury was. But the wound, which healed days ago, is now raw and bleeding.
Chapter 14. Helene. 2 weeks earlier.
You're insane, Farris says, as he, Dex, and I stare at the tracks in the dirt behind the storage building. I half believe him, but tracks don't lie, and these tracks tell quite a tale. A battle. One large opponent, one small. The small one nearly got the better of the larger one, until the small opponent was knocked out. At least that's what I assume, since there's no dead body around. The large opponent and a companion dragged the small opponent into the storage building and escaped on horseback, out a gate in the back wall. The horse had the Gens Veturia motto carved into its shoe. Always victorious. I think back to Cook's strange tale. They brought the demon low and escaped victorious. Even days old, the tracks are clear. No one has disturbed this place. It's a trap. Farris lifts his torch to illuminate the shadowy corners of the empty lot. That crackpot Cook was trying to get you to come here so she could ambush us. It's a riddle, I say, and I've always been good at riddles. This one took me longer than most. Days have passed since Cook's visit. Besides, an old crone against three masks isn't really an ambush. She got the jump on you, didn't she? Farris's cowlick tufts out, as it always seems to when he's agitated. Why would she even help you? You're a mask. She's an escaped slave. She's got no love for the Commandant, and... I gesture to the ground. It's clear the Commandant is hiding something. Besides, there's no ambush to be seen. Dex turns to a door in the wall behind us. But there is salvation half touched by shadow. The door faces east. It's only in shadow for half the day. I nod to the kiln. And that's the sleepless spire of suffering. Most of the scholars who work there are born and die in its shadow. But these tracks, Farris begins. There are only two silver-skinned she-demons in the Empire, I say. And one of them was getting tortured by Avitas Harper that night. Harper, suffice it to say, wasn't invited on this little outing. I examine the tracks again. Why didn't the Commandant bring backup? Why didn't she tell anyone she saw Elias that night? I need to talk to Karis, I say. Find out if...
That's a terrible idea,
a mild voice calls from the darkness behind me. Lieutenant Harper. I greet the spy, glaring at Dex as I do so. He grimaces, handsome face uneasy. He was supposed to make sure Harper didn't follow us. Skulking in the shadows as usual. I suppose you'll tell her all about this.
I don't need to. You're going to give it away when you ask about it. If the Commandant tried to hide what happened here, there's a reason. We should learn what it is before revealing we're onto her.
Farris snorts and Dex rolls his eyes. Obviously, idiot, that's what I'm going to do. But Harper doesn't need to know that. In fact, the stupider he thinks I am, the better. He can tell the Commandant that I'm no threat to her. There is no we, Harper. I turn away from him. Dex, check the reports from that night. See if there's anyone around here who saw anything. Farris, you and Harper track the horse. It's probably black or chestnut, and at least 17 hands. Quinn didn't like variety in his stables.
We'll track the horse, Harper says. Leave the Commandant, Shrike.
I ignore him, swing into my saddle, and make my way to Villa Veturia. It's not yet midnight when I arrive at the Veturia mansion. There are far fewer soldiers here than when I visited a few days ago. Either the Emperor has found another residence, or he's away. Probably in a brothel, or off murdering children for fun. As I'm escorted through the familiar halls, I wonder briefly about Marcus's parents. Neither he nor Zack ever spoke of them. His father is a farrier in a village north of Silas, and his mother is a baker. What must they feel, with one son murdered by the other, and the living one now crowned emperor? The Commandant meets me in Quinn's study and offers me a seat. I don't take it. I try not to stare as she sits at Quinn's desk. She wears a black robe, and the blue swirls of her tattoo, oft theorized about at Blackcliff, are just visible at her neck. I've only ever seen her in uniform. Without it, she seems diminished. As if sensing my thoughts, her eyes sharpen. "I owe you thanks, Shrike," she says. "You saved my father's life. I didn't want to kill him, but he wouldn't have given up the rulership of Jens Veturia easily. Getting him out of the city allowed him his dignity, and a smoother transition of power." She isn't thanking me. She was enraged when she learned her father had escaped Sarah. She's letting me know that she knows I was the one who helped him. How did she find out? Persuading Quinn not to storm Blackcliff's dungeons to save Elias was practically impossible, and sneaking him out under the nose of his guards was one of the most difficult things I have ever done. We were careful, beyond careful. "Have you seen Elias Veturia since the morning he escaped from Blackcliff?" I ask. She doesn't betray a flicker of emotion. "No." "Have you seen the scholar Lyre, formerly your slave, since she escaped from Blackcliff the same day?" "No." "You are the Commandant of Blackcliff and advisor to the Emperor, Kerris," I say. "But as Bloodshrike, I outrank you. You do realize I could haul you into interrogation and have you purged." "Don't pull rank with me, little girl," the Commandant says softly. "The only reason you're not already dead is that I, not Marcus, I, still have use for you. But," she shrugs, "if you insist on a purging, I will, of course, submit." I still have use for you. "Did you, on the night of Veturius's escape, see him at a storage building on the eastern wall of the city, fight him there, lose, and get knocked unconscious while he and the slave escaped on a horse?" "I just answered that question," she says. "Was there anything else, Bloodshrike? The Scholar Revolution has spread to Silas. At dawn, I'm to lead the force that will crush it." Her voice is as mild as ever. But for a moment, something flares in her eyes. A well-deep flicker of rage. It's gone as quickly as it appeared. I'll get nothing from her now. "Good luck in Silas, Commandant." As I turn to leave, she speaks. "Before you go, Bloodshrike, congratulations are in order." She allows herself a slight sneer. "Marcus is finalizing the paperwork now. Your sister's betrothal to the Emperor does him great honor. Their heir will be legitimately Illustrian." I am out the door and across the courtyard, my head filled with a rushing that makes me sick. I hear my father when I asked him what he'd traded for my freedom. "Nothing important, daughter." And Livia, a few nights ago, telling me Hannah was acting strange. Like she knows something we don't. I tear past the guards and vault onto my horse. All I can think is, not Livy, not Livy, not Livy. Hannah is strong, she's bitter, she's angry, but Livy... Livy is sweet and funny and curious. Marcus will see it and he will crush her. He'll enjoy doing it. I reach home, and before my horse has had a chance to stop, I'm sliding off and shoving through the front gates, straight into a courtyard packed full of masks.
Bloodshrike, one of them steps forward. You are to wait here. Let her through.
Marcus saunters out the front door of my house, my mother and father flanking him. Bleeding skies, no. The sight is so wrong that I want to scrub it from my eyes with lye. Hannah follows, head held high. The shine in her eyes bewilders me. Is it her, then? If so, why does she look happy? I've never hid my contempt of Marcus from her. As they enter the courtyard, Marcus bows and kisses Hannah's hand, the epitome of a well-behaved, high-born suitor.
Get the bleeding hells away from her, you pig!
I want to scream it. I bite my tongue. He's the Emperor, and you're his shrike. When he rises, he inclines his head to my mother.
Set a date, Mater Aquila. Don't wait too long.
Will your family wish to attend, Your Imperial Majesty? My mother asks.
Why? Marcus curls his lip. Too plebeian to go to a wedding?
Of course not, Your Majesty, my mother says. Only I have heard tell that your mother is a woman of great piousness. I expect that she would observe the augur's suggested mourning period of 4 months quite strictly. A shadow passes over Marcus's face.
Of course, he says. It will take as long for you to prove that Jens Aquila is worthy.
He approaches me, and at the horror in my eyes he grins, all the more savage for the pain he's just felt in remembering Zack.
Careful now, Shrike, he says. Your sister is to be in my care. You wouldn't want anything to happen to her, would you?
She... you... While I gibber, Marcus strides out, his guards trailing. When our slaves have closed the courtyard gates behind him, I hear Hannah's quiet laugh.
Won't you congratulate me, Bloodshrike? She says. I am to be Empress.
She's a fool, but she's still my little sister, and I love her. I cannot let this stand.
Father, I say, through gritted teeth, I would speak with you. You should not be here, Shrike, my father says. You have a mission to complete.
Can't you see, father? Hannah whirls on me. Ruining my marriage is more important to her than finding the traitor. My father looks a decade older than he did yesterday.
The betrothal papers have been signed by the Jens, he says. I had to save you, Helene. This was the only way.
Father, he is a murderer, a rapist. Isn't that every mask, Shrike? Hannah's words are a slap in the face. I heard you and your bastard friend speaking ill of Marcus. I know what I'm getting into. She swoops toward me, and I realize she's as tall as I am, though I don't remember when that happened. I don't care. I will be Empress. Our son will be heir to the throne. And the fate of Jens Aquila will forever be secure. Because of me. Her eyes glow with triumph. Think on that as you hunt down the traitor you call friend. Don't punch her, Helene. Don't. My father takes my arm.
Come, Shrike.
Where's Livy? I ask.
Sequestered in her room with a fever, father says, as we ensconce ourselves in his book-stuffed study. Your mother and I didn't want to risk Marcus picking her instead.
He did this to get at me. I try to sit but just end up pacing. The Commandant probably put him up to it.
Do not underestimate our Emperor, Helene, Father says. Caris wanted you dead. She tried to persuade Marcus to execute you. You know her. She refuses to negotiate. The Emperor came to me without her knowledge. The Illustrians have turned on him. They use the escape of Veturius and the slave girl to question his legitimacy as Emperor. He knows he needs allies, so he offered your life for Hannah's hand in marriage, and the full support of Jens Aquila.
Why not throw our weight behind another Jens? I say. There must be some who covet the throne.
They all covet the throne. The infighting has already begun. Who would you choose?
Jens Thessalia is brutal and manipulative. Jens Rufia would empty the Empire's coffers in a fortnight. All would object to any other Jens ruling. They will tear each other apart, vying for the throne. Better a bad emperor than a civil war.
But father, he's a—
Daughter!
Father raises his voice. A rare enough occurrence that I fall silent.
Your loyalty is to the Empire. Marcus is augur chosen. He is the Empire, and he needs a victory badly.
My father leans across his desk. He needs Elias. He needs a public execution. He needs the Jens to see that he is strong and capable.
You are Bloodstrike now, daughter. The Empire must come first, above your desires, your friendships, your wants.
Above, even, your sister and your Jens. We are Aquila, daughter. Loyal to the end. Say it.
Loyal, I whisper, even if it means my sister's destruction. Even if it means a madman running the Empire. Even if it means I have to torture and kill my best friend. To the end.
When I arrive at the empty barracks the next morning, neither Dex nor Harper mentions Hannah's betrothal. They are also wise enough not to remark on my black mood.
Faris is up the Drum Tower, Dex says. He heard back about the horse. As for those reports you had me look through.
My friend fidgets, pale eyes on Harper. Harper almost smiles.
There was something off about the reports, he says. The drums gave conflicting orders that night. Martial troops were in disarray, because the rebels cracked our codes and scrambled all the communiques.
Dex's mouth drops open.
How did you know?
I noticed it a week ago, Harper said. It wasn't relevant until today.
Two orders given that night went unobserved in the chaos strike. Both transferred men from the eastern part of the city elsewhere, thereby leaving that entire sector unpatrolled.
I curse under my breath.
Caris gave those orders, I say.
She let him go. She wants me tied up in the hunt for Veturius. With me gone, she can influence Marcus without interference, and— I glance at Harper. You're going to tell her I figured it out, aren't you?
She knew that the moment you walked into Villa Veturia, with questions.
Harper fixes his cool gaze on me.
She doesn't underestimate you, Shrike. Nor should she.
The door bursts open, and Faris lumbers through, ducking his head to avoid the frame. He hands me a slip of paper.
From a guard post, just south of Raider's Roost.
Black Stallion, 18 hands, Jens Veturia markings, found on routine camp raid 4 days ago, blood on saddle, beast in poor condition and showed signs of hard riding. Tribesman in possession was questioned, but insists horse wandered into his camp.
What in the bleeding skies was Veturius doing at Raider's Roost?
I say.
Why go east? The fastest way to escape the Empire is south.
Could be a ploy, Dex says. He could have treated the horse outside the city and turned south from there.
Faris shakes his head.
Then how do you explain the beast's condition and where it was found?
I let them argue. A chill wind blows through the open barracks door, rifling the reports on the table. bringing in the smell of crushed leaves, cinnamon, and distant sands. A tribal trader trundles past with his cart. He's the first tribesman I've seen in Sarah in days. The rest have left the city, in part because of the Scholar Revolt, and in part because of the fall gathering in Nur. No tribesman would miss it. It hits me like a lightning bolt. The fall gathering. Every tribe attends, including Tribe Saif. In the middle of all those people, animals, wagons and families, it would be child's play for Elias to slip past martial spies and hide among his adoptive family. Dex, I silenced the discussion, send a message to the garrisoner to tell his gap. I need a full legion mustered and ready to depart in 3 days. And saddle our horses. Dex lifts his silver brows. Where are we going? Nur, I say, as I walk out the door for the stables. He's heading to Nur.
Chapter 15. Liar. Elias suggests we rest, but sleep won't find me this night. Keenan is equally agitated. An hour or so after we've all bedded down, he gets up and disappears into the woods. I sigh, knowing I owe him an explanation. Delaying it will make the road to Koth more difficult than it already promises to be. I rise, shivering from the cold and pulling my cloak closer. Elias, on watch, speaks quietly as I pass. The poison, he says. Don't tell him. Or Izzy, please. I won't. I slow, thinking of our almost kiss, wondering if I should say anything. But when I turn to look at him, he's studiously staring out at the forest, his broad shoulders taut. I follow Keenan into the woods and run to catch his arm just as he's moving out of view. You're still upset, I say. I'm sorry. He throws off my arm and spins about, his eyes flashing dark fire.
You're sorry? Skies, liar. Do you have any idea what I thought when you weren't on that barge? You know what I've lost. And you did it anyway.
I had to, Keenan. I didn't realize it would hurt him. I thought he would understand. I couldn't let Izzy face the Commandant's wrath. I couldn't let Elias die.
So he didn't make you do any of this? Izzy said it was your idea. But I didn't believe her. I assumed he'd... I don't know. Used coercion. A trick. Now I find the two of you together. I thought you and I...
He crosses his arms, his bright hair falling into his face, and looks away from me. Skies. He must have seen Elias and me by the fire. How to explain? I never thought I'd see you again. I'm a mess. My heart is a mess. Elias is my friend, I say instead. Is it even true? Elias was my friend when we left Sarah. Now I do not know what he is.
You're trusting a martial liar. Do you realize that? 10 bleeding hells. He's the son of the Commandant. The son of the woman who killed your family.
He's not like that.
Of course he's like that. They're all like that. You and me, liar. We can do this without him. Look, I didn't want to say it in front of him because I don't trust him. But the resistance has knowledge of Koth. Men inside. I can get Darin out of there. Alive.
Koth isn't Central Prison, Keenan. It's not even Blackcliff. It's Koth. No one has ever broken out of there. So please, stop. This is my choice. I choose to trust him. You can come with me if you wish. I would be lucky to have someone like you along, but I'm not leaving Elias. He's my best chance of saving Darin. Keenan looks for a moment as if he wants to say more, but then simply nods.
Your will, then, he says.
There's something else I need to tell you. I never shared with Keenan why my brother was taken, but if rumors of Darin and Telamon have already reached the roost, then he's certain to hear about my brother's skills at some point. He might as well hear it from me.
Izzy and I heard the rumors while we were traveling, he says after I finish explaining. But I'm glad you told me. I'm glad you trust me.
When he meets my eyes, a spark jumps between us, heady and powerful. In the mist, his eyes are dark, so dark. I could disappear there. The thought pops unbidden into my mind. And not mind if I never found my way out.
You must be exhausted.
He lifts a palm to my face, hesitant. His touch is warm, and when his fingers fall away, I feel empty. I think of how he kissed me in Sarah.
I'll be there soon.
In the clearing, Izzy sleeps. Elias ignores me, his hand laid casually across the sim in his lap. If he's heard Keenan and me talking, he gives no indication of it. My bedroll is cold, and I huddle within, shivering. For a long time, I lay awake, waiting for Keenan to return. But the minutes pass, and he stays away. We reach the border of the Saren mountain range mid-morning, with the sun high in the east. Elias takes point as we zigzag out of the mountains and down a switchbacking trail to the foothills. The dunes of the tribal desert roll away beyond those foothills, a sea of molten gold with an island of green a dozen or so miles away. Nuh. Long wagon trains snake their way toward the city for the fall gathering. Miles of desert stretch past the oasis, littered with striated plateaus that rise into the sky like enormous rock sentinels. A wind races along the desert floor and up through the foothills, bringing with it the scents of oil and horse and roasting meat. The air nips at us. Autumn has come early to the mountains. But it might as well be the depths of a Saren summer, the way Elias sweats. This morning, he quietly told me that the Tellus extract ran out yesterday. His gold skin, so hale before, is worryingly pale. Keenan, who has been frowning at Elias since the moment we set out, falls into stride with him now.
Are you going to tell us how we're going to find a caravan that will take us to Koff?
Elias looks at the rebel askance but doesn't respond.
Tribesmen aren't exactly known for being accepting to outsiders, Keenan presses. Though your adoptive family is tribal, right? I hope you're not planning to seek their aid. The marshals will be watching them.
Elias's expression transforms from, what do you want, to go away.
No, I don't plan on seeing my family while I'm in Nur. As for getting north, I have a friend who owes me a favor.
A friend, Keenan says.
Who, don't take offense, Red, Elias says. But I don't know you, so you'll forgive me if I don't trust you.
I know the feeling. Keenan clenches his jaw.
I only wanted to suggest that instead of using Nur, we use resistance safe houses.
We could bypass Nur, and the martial soldiers who no doubt patrol it.
With the Scholar Revolt, rebels are probably being rounded up and interrogated. Unless you're the only fighter who knew about the safe houses, they are compromised.
Elias speeds his gait, and Keenan drops back, taking a position far enough behind me that I think it best to leave him be. I catch up with Izzy, and she leans toward me.
They've avoided ripping each other's faces off, she says. That's a start, right?
I choke back a laugh. How long until they kill each other, do you think?
And who strikes first?
2 days before all-out war, Izzy says. My money's on Keenan striking first. He's got a temper, that one. But Elias will win, being a mask and all. Though, she tilts her head, he doesn't look so good, liar.
Izzy always sees more than anyone gives her credit for. I'm certain she'll notice me dancing around the question, so I try to keep my response simple.
We should reach Nur tonight, I say. Once he rests, he'll be fine.
But by late afternoon, a powerful wind blows in from the east, and our progress slows as we enter the foothills. By the time we reach the stretch of dunes that lead to Nur, the moon is high, the galaxy a blaze of silver above. But we are all exhausted from fighting the wind. Izzy's walk has deteriorated to a stumble, and both Keenan and I pant in tiredness. Even Elias struggles, stopping short enough times that I begin to worry for him.
"I don't like this wind," he says. "The desert sandstorms don't start until late fall, but the weather since Sarah has been odd. Rain instead of sun, fog instead of clear skies."
We exchange a glance. I wonder if he's thinking what I am, that it feels as if something doesn't want us to reach Nur, or Koff, or Darin. The oil lamps of Nur glow like a beacon only a few miles to the east, and we head straight for them. But a mile or so into the dunes, a deep hum thrums out across the sands, echoing in our bones.
"What in the skies is that?" I ask.
"The sand is shifting," Elias says. "A lot of it. A sandstorm is coming. Quickly, now!"
The sands swirl restlessly, rising in taunting clouds before gusting away. After another half mile, the wind grows so frenzied that we can hardly make out the lights of Nur.
"This is insane," Keenan shouts. "We should turn back for the foothills. Find shelter for the night."
"Elias," I raise my voice over the wind. "How much would that delay us?"
"If we wait, we miss the gathering. We need those crowds if we want to pass unnoticed."
And he needs the Tellus. We cannot predict the soul catcher. If Elias starts convulsing again and loses consciousness, who knows how long that creature will keep him in the waiting place. Hours, if he's lucky. Days, if he's not. A shudder rolls through Elias, sudden and violent, and his body jerks, too sharply for anyone with eyes to miss it. I am beside him instantly.
"Stay with me, Elias," I whisper into his ear. "The soul catcher's trying to call you back. Don't let her."
Elias grits his teeth and the convulsion passes. I'm well aware of Izzy's bewildered look, Keenan's suspicion. The rebel steps closer.
"Liar, what?
We keep going."
I raise my voice so he and Izzy can hear.
"A delay now could mean a difference of weeks later if the snows come early or the northern passes are closed."
"Here."
Elias pulls a stack of kerchiefs from his pack and hands them to me. As I dole them out, he cuts a length of rope into 10-foot sections. Another shudder ripples across his shoulders, and he clenches his teeth, battling against it.
"Don't give in."
I give him a pointed look as Izzy huddles closer. Now is not the time. He binds Izzy to himself and is about to bind me to Izzy when she shakes her head.
"Liar, on your other side!"
Her gaze flits to Keenan so swiftly that I'm not sure I even saw it. I wonder if she heard Keenan imploring me to leave with him last night. My body shakes with the effort of standing in one spot. The winds scream around us, as violent as a chorus of funeral shrieks. The sound makes me think of the wraiths in the desert outside Sarah, and I wonder if fey creatures haunt this desert too.
"Keep the rope taut!"
Elias's hands brush mine, and his skin is fevered.
"Or I won't know if we've been separated."
Fear stabs at me, but he drops his face close to mine.
"Don't be afraid. I grew up in this desert. I'll get us to Nur."
We move east, our heads bowed against the onslaught of the storm. The dust blots out the stars, and the dunes shift beneath us so fast that we're staggering, fighting for every step. There's sand in my teeth, my eyes, my nose. I can't breathe. The rope between Elias and me tightens as he pulls me onward. On his other side, Izzy curves her reed-like body against the wind, clutching her scarf to her face. A scream echoes, and I falter.
"Izzy?"
"Just the wind." Then Keenan, who I thought was behind me, jerks on the rope from my left. The force of it pulls me down, and my body sinks into deep, soft sand. I fight to get back to my feet, but the wind is like a great pressing fist. I yank hard on the rope that I know connects me to Elias. He must realize I've fallen. Any second I'll feel his hands pulling me closer, lifting me to my feet. I scream his name into the storm, my voice useless against its rage. The rope jerks between us once. Then it goes horribly slack. And when I pull it in, there is nothing at the end of it.
Chapter 16. Elias. 1 second. I am using every ounce of strength I have to battle the winds and pull Lyra and Izzy forward. The next, the rope between Lyra and me falls limp. I pull it in, staggered when it ends after only 3 feet. No Lyra. I lunge back toward where I hope she'll be. Nothing. 10 hells. I tied the knots too quickly. One of them must have come undone. Doesn't matter, my mind howls. Find her. The wind screams, and I remember the Sandifritz I fought during the trials. A man-like shape rears in front of me, its eyes glowing with unrestrained malice. I stagger back in surprise. Where the hells did it come from? Then reach into my memory. Ifrit, Ifrit of the sand, a song is more than he can stand. The old rhyme comes back to me, and I sing it out. Work, work, please work. The eyes narrow, and for a second, I think the rhyme is useless. Then the eyes fade. But Lyra and Keenan are still out here, defenseless. We should have waited out the sandstorm. The damned rebel was right. If Lyra is buried in the sands, if she dies out here because I needed that accursed Tellus. She fell just before we were separated. I drop to my knees and sweep out with my arms. I catch a scrap of cloth, then a patch of warm skin. Relief washes over me, and I pull. It's her. I can tell from the shape and weight of her body. I draw her close and catch a flash of her face beneath the scarf, terrified as she wraps her arms around me. I've got you, I say, though I don't think she hears me. On one side I feel Izzy jostle me, and then a flare of red hair. Keenan, still roped to Lyra, bent over as he coughs the sand from his lungs. I refasten the rope, my hands shaking. In my head, I hear Izzy telling me to bind Lyra to myself. The knots were tight. The rope was whole and unblemished. It shouldn't have come undone. Forget that now. Move. Soon, the ground hardens from treacherous sand to the dry cobbles of the oasis. I graze a tree with my shoulders, and light flickers dimly through the sand. At my side, Izzy falls, clawing at her good eye. I lift her into my arms and push forward. Her body shakes as she coughs uncontrollably. One light turns to 2, and then a dozen. A street. My arms shake, and I nearly drop Izzy. Not yet. The hulking shadow of a rounded tribal wagon looms out of the darkness, and I fight my way toward it. I hope to the skies that it's empty, mostly because I don't think I have the energy to knock anyone senseless right now. I wrench the door open, undo the knot binding me to Izzy, and push her inside. Keenan bounds up after her, and I half lift, half shove Lyra in last. I swiftly untie the rope between us, but as I untangle the knot, I notice that the rope has no frayed ends. The place where it broke apart is smooth, as if it were cut. Izzy? No, she was next to me, and Lyra wouldn't do it. Keenan? Was he that desperate to get Lyra away from me? My vision fades, and I wag my head. When I look back at the rope, it's as frayed as an aging trawler's hawser. Hallucinations. Get to an apothecary, Elias. Now. Tend to Izzy, I shout at Lyra. Wash out her eye. She's sand blind. I'll bring something from the apothecary to help. I slam the wagon door shut and turn back into the storm. A tremor takes me. I can almost hear the soul catcher. Come back, Elias. The thick-walled buildings of Nur block enough of the sand that I can make out the street signs. I move carefully, keeping an eye out for soldiers. Tribesmen aren't crazy enough to be out in such a storm, but marshals will patrol no matter what the weather. As I turn a corner, I notice a poster on one of the walls. When I get closer, I curse. By order of His Imperial Majesty, Emperor Marcus Farrar. Wanted alive, Elias Veturius. Murderer, resistance collaborator, traitor to the Empire. Reward, 60,000 marks. Last seen, traveling east through the Empire in the company of Lyre of Serra, resistance rebel and spy. I tear the sign down, crumple it, and release it into the wind, only to see another a few feet away, and another. I step back. The entire bleeding wall is papered with them, as is the wall at my back. They're everywhere. Get the Tellus. I stumble away like a fiver after his first kill. It takes 20 minutes to find an apothecary, an agonizingly clumsy 5 minutes to pick the lock on the door. I light a lamp with shaking hands, and thank the skies when I see that this particular apothecary has alphabetized his remedies. I'm panting like a water-starved animal by the time I find the Tellus extract, but as soon as I gulp it down, relief sweeps through me, as does clarity. Everything rushes in. The storm, Izzy's sand blindness, the wagon where I left the others, and the posters. Bleeding hells, the wanted posters. My face, Lyre's face, everywhere. If there were dozens on one wall, then who knows how many there are throughout the city. Their existence means one thing. The Empire suspects we're here. So the martial presence in Nur will be far greater than what I expected. Damn it all to the hells! By now, Lyre will be frantic, but she and the others will have to wait. I swipe the apothecary's entire stock of Tellus, along with an unguent that will ease Izzy's eye pain. In minutes, I'm back in Nur's sand-scoured streets, recalling the time I spent here as a fiver, spying on the tribesmen and reporting my findings at the martial garrison. I take to the roofs to get to the garrison, wincing against the onslaught of the storm. It is still powerful enough to keep sane people inside, but not nearly as bad as when we arrived in the city. The martial stronghold, built of black stone, is horribly out of place among the sand-colored structures of Nur. As I approach, I slink along the edges of a rooftop balcony across the street from it. It's clear from the blazing lights and the soldiers entering and leaving that the building is packed, and not just with orcs and legionnaires. In the hour that I spend watching, I count at least a dozen masks, including one wearing pure black armor. The Black Guard. Those are Helene's men, now that she's Bloodshrike. What are they doing here? Another black armored mask emerges from the garrison. He is huge with pale, messy hair. Farris. I'd recognize that cowlick anywhere. He calls out to a legionnaire saddling a horse. "Run us to every single tribe," I overhear. "Anyone who shelters him is dead. Make that very clear, soldier." Another blackguard emerges. The skin of his hands and chin is darker, but I can make out nothing more than that from here. "We need a cordon around Tribe Saif," he says to Farris, "in case he seeks them out." Farris shakes his head. "That's the last place El Veturius would go. He wouldn't put them at risk." 10 burning hells. They know I'm here, and I think I know how. A few minutes later, my suspicions are confirmed. "Harper!" Helene's voice is steel, and I start at the sound of it. She strides out of the barracks, seemingly unaffected by the storm. Her armor gleams darkly, her pale hair a beacon in the night. Of course. If anyone could puzzle out what I'd do, where I'd go, it's her. I sink a little lower, certain she'll sense me, that she'll know in her bones I'm nearby.
Talk to the runners yourself. I want diplomatic men,
she says to the black guard named Harper.
They should seek out the tribal chiefs, the Zoldars or the Kihanis, the storytellers. Tell them not to talk to the children. The tribes are protective of them. And for Skye's sake, make sure none of them so much as think about looking at the women. I don't want a bleeding war on my hands because some idiot orcs couldn't keep his hands to himself. Faris, get that cordon up around Tribe Scythe, and keep a tail on Mamie Reela.
Both Faris and Harper leave to carry out Hell's orders. I expect her to go back into the garrison to get out of the wind. Instead, she takes two steps out into the storm, one hand on her sim. Her eyes are hooded, her mouth an angry slash. My chest aches when I look at Helene. Will I ever stop missing her? What is she thinking? Is she remembering when she and I were here together? And why in the hells is she hunting me in the first place? She must know the Commandant poisoned me. If I'm dead anyway, what's the point of capturing me? I want to go down to her, to grab her in a bear hug and forget that we are enemies. I want to tell her about the soul catcher and the waiting place, and how, now that I've tasted freedom, I only wish I could find a way to keep it. I want to tell her that I miss Quinn, and that Demetrius, Leander, and Tristus haunt my nightmares. I want, I want, I want. I wrench myself halfway across the rooftop, then leap to the next, leaving before I do something stupid. I have a mission. So does Helene. I have to want mine more than she wants hers. Ordarin is dead.
Chapter 17. Liar. Izzy tosses in her sleep, her breathing ragged and labored. She flings out an arm, and her hand knocks into the ornate wooden paneling of the wagon. I stroke her wrist, whispering soothing words. In the muted lamplight, she looks pale as death. Keenan and I sit cross-legged beside her. I've propped her head up so she can breathe easier, and I've washed out her eye. She still cannot open it. I release a breath, remembering the violence of the storm, how small I felt against its raking claws. I thought I'd lose purchase with the earth and be flung into darkness. Against the storm's violence, I was less than a mote of dust. You should have waited, Lyra. You should have listened to Keenan. What if the sand blindness is permanent? Izzy will lose her sight forever because of me. Get a hold of yourself. Elias needed the Tellus, and you need Elias if you want to get to Darin. This is a mission. You are its leader. This is the cost. Where is Elias? It's been ages since he left. Dawn is no more than an hour or two away. While it's still windy outside, it's not bad enough to keep people off the streets. Eventually, the owners of this wagon will return. We can't be here when they do. Elias is poisoned, Keenan speaks softly. Isn't he? I try to keep my face blank, but Keenan sighs. The wind rises, rattling the wagon's high windows. He needed medicine. It's why you made for Raider's Roost, instead of heading straight north, he says. Skies. How bad is it?
It's bad. Izzy's voice is a rasp. Very bad. Nightweed.
I stare incredulously at Izzy.
You're awake! Thank the skies! But how do you know? Cook amused herself by telling me all the poisons she'd use on the Commandant if she could, Izzy said. She was quite detailed in her description of their effects.
He's going to die, Lyra, Keenan says. Nightweed is a killer.
I know. I wish I didn't. He knows too. It's why we had to get into Nur. And you still want to do this with him.
If Keenan's brows went any higher, They disappear into his hairline. Forget the fact that just being in his presence is a risk, or that his mother killed your parents, or that he's a mask, or that his people are currently wiping ours out of existence. He's dead, liar. Who knows if he'll even live long enough to get to cough? And Skies, why would he want to come? He knows Darren could change everything for the scholars, I say. He doesn't believe in the Empire's evil any more than we do. Keenan scoffs. I doubt that. Stop! The word is a whisper. I clear my throat and reach for my mother's armlet. Strength. Please. Keenan hesitates, then takes my hands as I curl them into fists. I'm sorry. For once, his gaze is unguarded. You've been through the hells, and I'm sitting here making you feel worse. I won't mention it again. If this is what you want, then this is what we'll do. I'm here for you. Whatever you need. A sigh of relief escapes me and I nod. He traces the K on my chest, the mark the Commandant carved into me when I was her slave. It is a pale scar now. His fingers drift up to my collarbone, my face. I missed you, he says. Isn't that strange? 3 months ago, I'd never even met you. I study his strong jaw, the way his brilliant hair spills across his forehead, the muscles bunched in his arm. I sigh at his scent, lemon and wood smoke, so familiar to me now. How did he come to mean so much to me? We hardly know each other, and yet, at his proximity, my body goes still. I lean into his touch involuntarily, the warmth of his hand drawing me closer. The door opens and I jump back, reaching for my dagger. But it's Elias. He glances between Keenan and me, his skin so sickly when he left us in the wagon, is back to its usual gold hue. We have a problem. He climbs into the wagon and unfolds a sheet of paper, a wanted poster, with frighteningly accurate depictions of Elias and me. How in the skies did they know? Izzy asks. Did they track us? Elias looks down at the wagon floor, swirling the dust there with his boot. Helene Aquila is here. His voice is oddly neutral. I saw her at the Marshall Garrison. She must have worked out where we were going. She's got a cordon around Tribe Scythe, and hundreds of soldiers here to help search for us. I find Keenan's eyes. Just being in his presence is a risk. Maybe coming into Nur was a bad idea. We need to get to your friend, I say, so we can leave with the rest of the tribes. How do we do it? I was going to suggest we wait for night again, and then use disguises. But that's what Aquila would expect, so we do the opposite. We hide in plain sight. How are we supposed to hide a scholar rebel, two former slaves, and a fugitive in plain sight? Keenan asks. Elias reaches into his bag and pulls out a set of manacles. I have an idea, he says. But you're not going to like it. Your ideas, I hiss at Elias as I trail him through the stiflingly packed streets of Nur, are almost as deadly as mine. Quiet, slave. He nods at a squad of marshals marching lockstep through an adjacent street. I press my lips together, and the manacles weighing down my ankles and wrists clink. Elias was wrong. I don't just dislike this plan. I hate it. He wears a red slaver's shirt and holds a chain that connects to an iron collar around my neck. My hair hangs in my face, mussed and tangled. Izzy, her eyes still bandaged, trails me. 3 feet of chain stretch between us, and she relies on my whispered directions to keep from tripping. Keenan follows her, sweat beading on his face. I know how he feels, as if we're actually being led to auction. We follow Elias in an obedient row, heads down, bodies defeated, as scholar slaves are expected to look. Memories of the Commandant flood my head, her pale eyes as she carved her initial into my chest with such sadistic care. The blows she delivered as casually as if casting pennies to beggars. Keep it together, Elias glances back at me, perhaps sensing my rising panic. We've still got to get across the city. like the dozens of other slavers we've seen here in Ner. Elias leaves us with a confident disdain, barking out the occasional order. He mutters at the dust in the air and looks down on the tribesmen as if they are cockroaches. With a scarf covering the lower half of his face, I can see only his eyes, almost colourless in the morning light. His slaver's shirt fits more loosely than it would have a few weeks ago. The battle against the commandant's poison has stripped him of his bulk, and he is all edges and angles now. The sharpness heightens his beauty, but it seems almost like I'm looking at his shadow instead of the real Elias. Ner's dusty streets are packed with people, going from encampment to encampment. Chaotic as it is, there is a strange order to it. Each camp flies its own tribal colours, with tents to the left, merchant stalls to the right, and the traditional tribal wagons forming a perimeter. "Ugh, liar," Izzy whispers from behind me. "I can smell the marshals. Steel and leather and horse. It feels like they are everywhere." "That's because they are," I whisper through the side of my mouth. Legionnaires search shops and wagons. Masks bark orders and enter houses with no warning. Our progress is slow, as Elias takes a circuitous route through the streets in an attempt to avoid the patrols. My heart is in my throat the entire time. I search in vain for free scholars, hoping that some have escaped the Empire's butchery. But the only scholars I see are in chains. News of what's happening in the Empire is scarce, but finally, amid the incomprehensible snatches of Sardis, I hear two Mercators speaking in Seren.
"Not even sparing the children,"
the Mercator trader looks over his shoulder as he speaks.
"I hear the streets of Silas and Sarah run red with scholar blood."
"Tribesmen are next," his companion, a leather-clad woman, says.
"Then they'll come for Marin."
"They'll try," the man says. "I'd like to see those pale-eyed bastards get through the forest."
Then we are past them, and their conversation fades, but I feel like retching. The streets of Silas and Sarah run red with scholar blood. Skies, how many of my old neighbours and acquaintances have died? How many of Pop's patients?
"That's why we're doing this,"
Elias glances back at me, and I realize he heard the Mercators too.
"It's why we need your brother. So stay focused."
As we make our way through a particularly crowded thoroughfare, a patrol led by a mask in black armor turns into the street just yards ahead.
"Patrol,"
I hiss at Izzy. "Head down." Immediately, she and Keenan stare at their feet. Elias's shoulders stiffen, but he ambles forward in an almost leisurely manner. A muscle in his jaw jumps. The mask is young. His skin is the same golden brown as mine. He's as lean as Elias but shorter, with green eyes that angle up like a cat's and cheekbones that jut as sharply as the hard planes of his armor. I've never seen him before, but it doesn't matter. He's a mask, and as his eyes pass over me, I find that I cannot breathe. Fear pounds through me, and all I can see is the Commandant. All I can feel is the lash of her whip on my back and the cold grasp of her hand on my throat. I can't move. Izzy runs into my back and Keenan into hers.
"Go on,"
Izzy says frantically. People nearby turn to watch. "Why now, Lyra? For Skye's sake, get hold of yourself." But my body won't listen. The manacles, the collar around my neck, the sounds of the chains, they overwhelm me. And though my mind screams at me to keep moving, my body only remembers the Commandant. The chain attached to my collar jerks, and Elias swears at me with an insouciant brutality that is uniquely martial. I know he is playing a part, but I cringe anyway, reacting with a terror that I thought I had buried. Elias wheels as if he's going to strike me and yanks my face toward his. To an outsider, it would just appear as if a slaver is disciplining his property. His voice is soft, audible only to me.
"Look at me."
I meet his gaze, the Commandant's eyes. No. Elias's. I'm not her. He takes my chin